I want to hit on a couple of quick things talking about our investigation so far. I know Dan mentioned the deficits and external deficits. One big area that we have seen these external deficits arise from, and this is pretty common, unfortunately, with tribes, is how the tribes manage, I'll use the term contract support costs. There are agreements in place between federal agencies and the tribe to collect reimbursement from grant funding for the administrative efforts the tribe puts into administering federal grant-funded programs. Now, what's happened over the course of several years now is that the tribe has accumulated a bit of a deficit where they were expecting to receive a certain amount from the federal government, but these contract support costs are either limited or the federal government says, we're not gonna pay it. And as a result, what happens is you're expecting to get full reimbursement, but what happens is the tribe has to pay for the difference because the tribe is simply not getting reimbursed for that funding. And again, this is an unfortunate situation. It's really unfortunate over the several decades now that the federal government has not lived up to their end of the bargain in funding these contract support costs that they have indicated they would. It's just an unfortunate reality that a lot of these costs, basically the tribe is not going to collect. So we're investigating that. It's about a $10 million amount that is just simply not going to be paid back. So we'll cover that a bit more. We have also looked at, you know, the concerns that the council has raised, and what I understand is that is there these deficits that could put the tribe in a concerning situation financially, insolvency, et cetera. One of the key tools that we look at right away is how effective is the tribe's budgeting process. From our preliminary review, we're still looking at this, but I've been rather pleased on how the tribe has been able to manage their budgets, especially with expenses. It's done pretty well. I think more the concern I have that we're looking at is not necessarily meeting budgets, but the timing of when payments are made and when cash is collected. Throughout the year, there could be cases where there's a lot of money spent one month and you're expecting to get reimbursement, let's say, from the federal government from some of these cost reimbursement grants, and perhaps you're not getting that money back until a few months later. So that is a concern because in a case where you're maybe, you know, one month you're spending a lot of money, well, you only have so much money in your bank account. So you have to wait for a few more months until you get that money collected. So what we were hoping to do, and a big goal, is to reduce that timing difference and make it a little easier to manage the tribe's bank accounts throughout the year. So those are a few things that we're looking at right now. Again, I've met with council, and since we're in the middle of our engagement and helping the tribes and the tribe with their financial situation, we're looking at presenting our results, our adjustments, providing our recommendations to council in January. And I'm thankful that council will have that open to membership because transparency is a huge thing for what I see. And the more that we can engage in a conversation about what needs to happen and what issues there are and how to fix that, the better. So I look forward to questions that you may have. And I'm going to pause there for now to see if I can help answer anything.
Okay, we can open it up for questions. Anybody had sure.
A couple of things that the tribal council has already talked about. We're waiting for this report. to see what the real deal is. And assuming that, it results in that the tribal council overspent its share of the money in the past and that membership is due something back, we have to look at how is that going to be paid. The second thing that we're looking at is, do we create, and if we create it, how big does an operating budget have to be? Because what Ryan just said is that there are gaps in when a tribe receives money. We don't want that gap to result in going to there's only two primary sources of money the tribe has access to. One is a trust fund. We will not go get money from the trust fund to pay a tribal debt. The other is the entity money, the 80%. The council's already said, by law, by membership law, we don't have access to that. So given that, how do we get ourselves back into a position where we have an operating budget and a reserve so that when months go by without getting paid by an outside party, we do not bill the membership. We keep it within the government. So that will be, those are things that will come about after we see this. And by the way, I will say one thing, the kind of collateral impact of deficits. What we've seen in the tribes fund, Liz is our expert on insurance, and we've always heard about this money that's owed to the insurance that the tribe, because it all these cash flow problems, the tribe couldn't cash a check. And so an insurance check. So because we didn't have the cash money to cash that. And that was reported to be as high as $8 million in some circles. Just what the council did in the past year, primarily dealing with this fire suppression cost, the tribe paid $1.2 million to the insurance fund, first time in years. We have since done some analysis of this, an actuarial study, and it may be that the insurance fund is solvent at $1 million. So and why wasn't those checks being paid? Being cash, it's because we had too much money going out to other places and people not paying their bills and leaving the tribe in a situation where we had the money going out of the general fund but not coming back to the general fund. So just those kind of indicators that we're paying our insurance bills now that demonstrate that something positive is happening. We're not liquidating the money faster than it's coming in. Now, again, we're going to have to figure out, depending on what the results of this meeting is and this report, how much money is owed to the membership. And if we do, in fact, owe money to the membership, where is that going to be coming from?
Yep, come on up, Steve.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Baldy, tribal member. I have a general question for the Moss Adams representative. That question is, in addition to looking at accounting systems and how the tribe does its budgeting and how it accounts for its various funds, do you also look at the various tribal laws and tribal ordinances that are beyond simple accounting procedures and budgeting processes? We have laws that say how our funds are supposed to be used. And if we had followed, in my opinion, those laws, you would not be talking about looking at a $11 million contract support deficit. So that's my question. Do you look at other tribal laws and ordinances?
Yes, sir. That's extremely important when we talk about the accounting system. We're not only looking at tribal laws, but federal restrictions as well for certain monies. So if there's a tribal ordinance where a certain allotment of money needs to be set aside, there are specific requirements how that needs to be accounted for in the accounting system. So that absolutely is something we look at. It's critical, especially, again, not only with tribal ordinances, but with federal laws, that the tribe is separately distinguishing those in the accounting system. That's part of our engagement.
So that when we hear statements that our tribe is financially solvent, because when you make those kinds of statements, you can say that in relation to if you count everything in the tribe that's available to the tribe, when you're looking at the financial stability, you count the value of the land, you count the value of the buildings, you count the value of our resources, etc. Except, and you also count the amount of federal contracts and grants that you have. Unfortunately, those funds and those resources are not available by tribal law to cover the deficits that we have accumulated. So that has to be addressed in our audit. We can make a broad statement, but we can't back it up. We don't have those resources all available to cover our deficit. What I think that we should be looking at in terms of our deficit is recognizing what the total amount of the deficit is. We have had from the tribal government, from our accounting office, tell us that the deficit is $9 million, but it excluded the contract support deficit of $11 million. So when you look at the total amount, you say, well, we have, from what we know, about a $20 million deficit. And when I say deficit, I mean this. In order to have in the contract support category alone, I'm not going to talk about all the tribal businesses that we have covered their expenses that owe those funds back to the tribe. I'm not talking about that. Let's just talk about contract support. In order to cover contract support, and you mentioned it earlier, the tribe had to come up with resources, money, actual cash, to pay for the over expenditures of the contract support budget, all the way back, and I think you mentioned 2015. In 1 year, we had a contract support deficit of $2.5 million. In 1 year. Now, that's not me saying that. That's an accountant like yourself from another company pointing that out in another kind of report. What that means is we were doing something, in my opinion, incompetently back in 2015 by overspending our contract support budget by $2.5 million. And then we continued every year to also keep overexpending. Now, it got a little bit less because people got concerned about it, but we kept overspending. That, in order to pay for those overexpenditures, we had to use funds that belonged to the membership. It wasn't supposed to be spent by the council to cover their overexpenditures of running the contract support program. That money belonged to the membership. Now, what we should be talking about is saying, okay, we did do that. That money that belonged to the membership starting at a minimum in 2015 is this much money, whatever it is. We need to come up with a plan on how we're going to pay that back to the membership. And we have talked about this for about 3 years now, three budgeting cycles that I can remember, and we always get bogged down on what the total amount is. I don't care what the total amount is. I think that what we should be talking about is the plan. We don't need to know what the final figure is to say, yeah, prior councils, all the way up until now. I don't know what our deficit is for 2023. I don't know what our deficit is for 2024. And I don't know really what our deficit is for 2025. But I'm assuming that we are going to have additional deficits to add to our current $20 million figure. We have to come up with a plan on how we're going to reduce that, how we're going to pay it back. Because that, again, that the money that we're spending to cover the deficits is funds that are due the tribal members.
Sir, thank you for your comments. If I might just clarify a couple of things just real quick here. Number one, the deficit I mentioned on the contract support, that's not in addition to the number that you cited. This is a deficit that has been accumulated in the tribe's accounting system for a while. So that's been part of the deficits that the tribe has been communicating. Again, I just want to be clear, it's not in addition to the deficits you've been aware of. Second, the issue of this contract support is not unique to Hoopa Valley. This is an issue, broadly speaking, that has impacted tribes all over the nation. It's quite simply, these are the administrative expenditures that go to support federal grants. And the federal government has an obligation to fund those administrative expenses. But they haven't over decades, honestly, and you've seen settlements as a result of this. And through the Supreme Court, most recently with helping tribes fund contract support moving forward. So this is a systemic issue where tribes simply have needed to cover these deficits because they have to, because they're not going to get that additional funding from the tribe or from the federal government.
I agree with you, but I think in relation to our council, which is probably not your issue, is that our council needs to tell us on a year-by-year basis when that's occurring and not acting like there is not an over-expenditure or a use of tribal member money to cover those deficits. And that hasn't been done. That has not been done. And every one of you, I think, have run in the past for election based on transparency. Everybody's used that word. We're going to be transparent, but not inform. And I think part of the transparency is informing the membership of how you're covering these over expenditures. Now, I agree that the federal government has not been paying what it's supposed to be paying under contract support. That's across the nation is the case. But in our case, it's the responsibility of our tribe to make sure that that's a reasonable figure, not 2.5 million, not 1.5 million. The last time that we had this discussion, and I commended the council and I commended the fiscal office, we were talking about a pretty even contract support revenues and expenses for the, I think 2023, I'm not sure what the year is. If we can do it for that year, under the condition that we recognize the government is not paying its fair share, if we can come up to being even, then we could have come up to being even in the past. And we didn't. We did it by 2.5 million, a minus figure. All that I'm saying again is that let's recognize how that happened, let's fix how it happened, and let's pay back a plan, have a plan that pays back the membership the money that was used by those councils in the past. That's all that we're suggesting. The other thing that I wanted to point out, in terms of some of the other figures that contribute to the deficit, we have been, and I'm not saying that you need to shut down any business at all. I'm not saying that. But we have been paying for the over expenses, the losses of our tribal businesses. Now, the only money in my mind, we can't use federal funds to do that. We can't use state funds to do that. In some cases, your reports you're handing out today, so that you can, yeah, there are some grants that help those enterprises become more profitable, almost break even. But those funds, again, that were used to keep those businesses from 2015 forward are quite a bit of money, I think, to the tune of at least $9 million. That's not, again, my figure. That's an outside figure. That needs to be included in our plan. Now, I know, and we have to take some hard looks at ourselves. We put out this financial report. This particular financial report is what you put out on HFI and the milling operation. I looked at it at first, and I was pretty happy. I said, geez, we got a big profit here that we're making. That's pretty astounding, given that in a prior year, the losses have been, we continued to operate at a loss. And then I said, well, okay, let's look at this. Here's a report that says we got a big profit. But then when you start looking at it, you say, oh, in each one of these revenues for the mill and for the logging company, you have grants that are helping to support those, which I think is good. It's good, but it kind of skews what's really going on with the operation. It's still at a loss. If you take away the grants, they're at a loss, okay? Now, if those grants can continue for the next 20 years, great. That's great. But let's not kid ourselves about what's going on with our enterprises. I know that you have, I don't know if you've passed it, but a resolution that transfers the oversight of some of the tribal enterprises to the Denoto Corporation. So when that happens, there's a couple of questions about that, but it still needs to be apparent to the membership as to what's really going on with the tribal businesses. And we should be having those discussions, which we're not. And that's not really much to do with the representative from Moss Adams. That's a separate kind of a thing.
Sir, you brought up a good point, and we're right now we're getting, for the tribal enterprises and tribal businesses, we're getting all of their either standalone audit reports or standalone accounting information, because you keyed on a thing that we're making sure is being addressed, and we do want to hit that up a bit more in January's council meeting. What amounts are owed from your businesses to the tribe to support either their maybe payroll costs, maybe to support their operations? We want to be able to communicate to council, these are the amounts that your businesses owe you still. And is it likely that that could be collected? If you have a significant amount outstanding that's due from a tribal business, but they're not making enough money to ever pay that back, clearly that's an issue, and we want to address that with council.
I also want to commend this council. When you say that you've now adopted an operational procedure, I guess, that says you're not going to touch any of the other, those funds that belong to the tribal membership. I think that's great. But I think that needs to be memorialized somehow, because when you guys get unelected, which will happen, the councils change. What's to say that the next council says, hey, we have this money over here. We need to touch it for whatever reason. Could be, good reasons, could be bad reasons. So you need to do something with that agreement about not touching those funds. And I think that what you need to think about is that needs to become some kind of a strict ordinance. It has to become some kind of a policy or something, so that we as tribal members can hold you accountable in the future with future council people to say, hey, if you do that, we go to court. that you lose your sovereign immunity. We can take you to court to say you're violating a tribal ordinance, if that's the case. But there needs to be some meat, some enforcement ability in that sort of gentleman's agreement that you have right now about not using those funds, because councils change. And that's the end of my recommendations.
Can I comment?
Sure.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Regarding the solvency of the Hoopoe Valley Tribe versus the deficit, the Constitution is real clear. The Hoopoe Valley Tribe is the people. It's in Article 1 of the Constitution. Article 5 of the Constitution creates a tribal government, and in Article 9 of the Constitution says the tribal government can spend, Article 9, Section 1C of the Constitution says the tribal government can spend money of the people, right? Through a budget process, right? And what you're talking about is money being spent outside of that budget process. I mean, in general terms, we still have to figure out, you know, the efficiency of spending and the programs and all that. But the one thing we absolutely got to do is make sure we stay within the budget and have a budget in place. We had hoped to have forensic accounting done by this previous October 1, so that with tribal council can say, we see what the money is, and we'll budget on that. We don't have that. This is going to be January, unfortunately. But while we've been talking about all this forensic accounting, this is the first one we're doing. At least it's being done. I want to get to your point. How do we make sure that we have a budget and stay within that budget? And to me, I think tribal council has really discussed this in restructuring and different things. To me, I question whether or not we can have an Office of Financial Accountability as a program within a tribe, as opposed to a contract, not with Moss Adams, but similar to Moss Adams, to where you have an external contractor coming in and look at the budget prior to the beginning of the fiscal year, so that when the council's sitting developing the budget, we can see the forensic audit results. And then we can spend money based on that. And that forensic audit would also say what we have done over the past year. I think it has to be done every year. But again, let's wait until we get this done, and let's have this discussion, open discussion with the membership about where we are financially, and let's deal with the repayment plan if that's what's required, and let's also deal with how do we keep this on the same track year after year after year, until the government, Article 5 government, and the membership, Article 1 membership, has a sense of transparency and honesty between us. When we get there, I hope we get there fast. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the meaning of transparency is going to, and the honesty is going to be based on whether we can show that we've done it right.
Go ahead, Galena.
Thank you. Galena Moore, Hoopa tribal citizen. I, too, would like to commend this council for following through on getting this audit done. There are some of us that have been in front of councils, not necessarily this council, but past councils, for at least 4 years, asking for this audit. And when we received the report, or at least saw the report from 2020, it really raised a lot of alarm bells about what was going on with our finances. Why did we take such a deep dive, especially around 2015? What was going on there? What kind of spending was happening? What was being done about it? It was a pretty uphill battle to get the information which belongs to the people. I think there was a lot of protectionism with some of our tribal businesses. I know there was just a you know, we got to keep doing this, and, you know, thinking it was going to get better, and it hasn't. And it goes back prior to 2015. I'm glad to see that we're starting to separate our businesses from our government with the transfer of some of the businesses over to the Denoto Corporation, because then what we're being told is we will get business plans, we'll be looking at some feasibility studies to see how viable these businesses are, whether we want to keep going in that direction in the future or we need to do something different. But this is not directed at Mr. Lucan Kimura. Sorry, yeah. I probably mispronounced your name. Yeah. This is to the people. We sit above the council. It is us. And we have been, some of us has been here for the last several years saying this, talking about transparency, accountability, and there's been, it's like talking to a brick wall. 1 year we passed a deficit budget of $1 million. How can you do that? You don't do it with your own personal accounts. Why would we do that with, which we know some of the money is the people's money. So again, I don't want to seem disparaging. I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you having this audit done. It'll be good to get this report and know where we're at so that we can plan for ourselves in the future. I agree with Steve that we do have to have a plan for the deficit, whether some of that is written off, whether that's a repayment plan to the people, but we have to have a plan. It can't just get swept under the rug. But again, I'm glad to see the people that came out today. I'm hoping that we have the same when we have the budget meeting in January, and or we even have more people come. But again, people, we sit above the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenna. I think, did we have somebody on the Zoom with their hand up? Okay. Farah, you have the floor on Zoom.
Thank you, and sorry I'm not there in person. I'm fighting a cold, so thank you for allowing us to join via Zoom. I just had a quick question. We know in 2020 there was business kind of forgiveness given by the federal government. Up to date, I haven't seen that on our budgets, and maybe I have not full access to it, so maybe it's labeled as something else. So just wondering for our council and also for the kind gentleman that's now helping us and a good ally to our people, just wondering if you also are aware that the roads and aggregate mix and also our forestry and our grocery enterprise all will provide federal allowances, like for instance for the grocery enterprises, and everyone can just Google this, by the way. It's $201,638.36, and then forest industries received $197,557.43 forgiveness, and then also aggregate received $192,335.30, and they received funding not only in 21, but also 22 with similar amounts. Just wondering if we can also include that in our budget, and perhaps it's there again. My apologies if it's there and I'm just not fully aware of it, but that's something I think our membership can see, that not only our business enterprises are being active in order to fill the deficit, but also just knowing that there's allocations that are also coming through that way. So just wanted to point out that, and then also have a question if we're going to be able to access the documentations that are going to be able for the January meeting of 2025. A lot of times we often don't receive our documents in time to fully go over them. And, you know, I like to go line by line on things, and it would be great if we could have access electronically, and also just it's easier for marking up documents sometimes electronically than packing documents to the meeting. So thank you, Cynthia and Fishon.
Thanks, Vera. We're going to try and do whatever we can to make the meeting in January as inclusive as possible, sharing as much information as we can. We're kind of trying to get the portal on the tribe's website to be I guess, more efficient also. So yeah, we'll try and get you as much information as possible for January meeting. We also haven't actually scheduled a date for that yet. We just had a kind of a preliminary discussion with the Moss Adams folks yesterday or the day before, kind of talking about, okay, the expectation of when the report ultimately will be finished is in January. So we're just kind of leading up from, we wanted to have it on the agenda today, at least give people an opportunity to hear what has been happening, what intends to happen. And, but yeah, the ultimate time for the public meeting will be sometime in January. And hopefully we can make as much information available as possible. Did anyone else have their hands up on Zoom? Come on up, Stan.
So I just wanted to say to the general, to everybody here today, that I come to these meetings often, and often I've received repercussions from these meetings in the past, from bringing up the tribe's dirty laundry and things like that. I've had people call CPS on me. I've had things like that happen to me after telling the truth about what some people may or may not be doing, you know, with their council positions and things like that. And so I've been reluctant to talk about things because it got to the point where I had to start guarding my children, because people in Hoopa fight very dirty when you bring up money and where money goes to and how it's spent and the way people live their lives with without much conscience to the membership a lot of the times. I see things abused, you know, and sitting here in the cold, it's kind of hard to believe that we're not broke and we can't even afford heat, you know, to make sure our elders are comfortable here today. And a lot of why we get in these situations that we're in is because people so often choose when or when not to follow the protocols and procedures. Somebody could come from a large voting family and totally abuse their job, but they can't be fired because, oh no, you know, that would be taboo. They come from a large voting family. Council might not get reelected. You know, let them go ahead and abuse their position, you know. It's more important to make sure you keep receiving that council paycheck than it is to make sure the kids have a future, you know. Our school was closed recently, 2 days, because there was no teachers. And nobody wanted to come to Hoopa to substitute because it's too far of a drive. Teachers used to live here, but we as a people close out outsiders and their ideas and what they bring to our community by tribalism. We don't allow anybody else any outright to speak here. There could be somebody that lived in our community for 50 years that has valuable insight to bring, but they're not allowed to speak at this microphone. And our community remains closed off because of that. You know, sometimes diversity brings, you know, just more to the table. It brings more thoughts, it brings more positivity, and it brings more revenue even, you know, just by having more people around, having more events, you know. I know what I'm saying is kind of just a general, but it's something that I've pondered a lot. We go over the numbers here a lot, and these meetings are meant to stay in that scope, but there's so much more that we need to talk about on a broader focus as us as a people. I agree with everything that Glenna and Steve have said earlier. I mean, and at some point we need to sit down and have regular discussions on how people treat each other and go back to the basics of who we are as a people. We're Native people. We're supposed to be close, and we're supposed to be kind to one another, and we're supposed to think about one another all the time. And help each other through. Greed is starting to take that over, and we need to be the people to turn it around before it gets too late for our children.
Thanks, Sam. Any other comments? Any questions people have?
Jill asked if the auditors read the budget ordinance, and then there's a comment. It says, I'm an elder, and it's sad to say that I have yet to see a council that has the membership as a whole as a priority. I hope that the words I'm hearing are true and our home valley and tribal members are kept informed and taken care of, not only with finances, but with respect. Everyone should read the two ordinances. The other ordinance is the per capita ordinance. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, I think Ryan did allude to earlier that he was aware of the tribal budget ordinance and the per capita ordinance and any other documents and laws that govern the tribe's spending, budget process, those things. But Ryan, I think he's still there on the screen. If you had anything you wanted to add to that, and maybe some comments in closing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I was pleased to hear some of these comments. I'm thankful too about the mention specifically the per capita and budget ordinance. Have not reviewed those yet, but those are part of our review. We're still in the preliminary stages of our engagement, so that will be addressed before January, and we can provide some information on that when we present to council. But in closing, this is our goal, is just to be able in January to kind of show you what we've done, hitting up all these particular areas that have been mentioned, and maybe some of the other issues that we see that need to be corrected. A good goal for us is January, having our recommendations, providing training to the team to be able to know exactly what needs to happen moving forward. And that's the value we add, and that's what we want to accomplish. So I look forward to everybody in January. I'll be out there on site, and appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, this issue is, I think, has been a priority for the membership for a number of years, decades for that matter. So we're trying to get to a place where we can feel more comfortable with the way that the tribe's operating, the way that the financial system is working, and that we are solving, that we are trying to actually have balanced budgets and not overspend in areas where it's going to have a negative impact on the membership. As well, you talked a little bit about the enterprises. I think in the future we intend to have a meeting as well with the folks from the Denodo Corporation. I think that they put together a proposal recently and a PowerPoint for us, and I think it was pretty informative and might be something that the membership would be interested in as well. So those two things kind of go together, and we're kind of going down the road to maybe merge in January to have possible two meetings to discuss those types of things. So anyhow, the next, any other questions, comments, anybody? No? Okay, we're going to move next to the Kamau Medical Center update. We have today the new CEO, Ryan Zumwalt. Let's everybody give him a welcome. He's been here for about a month now, and I look forward to his presentation. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. All right, thank you everyone. For those that don't know me, as Ryan said, our chairman said, my name's Ryan Zumwalt. Just jumping into Kamau Medical Center, have about 26 years in healthcare experience in many different platforms, so I'm really excited to be here and participate to build our medical platform and our model throughout the valley. And jumping in and talk a little about what I found in the last month and working, listening to the members in the community, also listening to staff and the medical center and where we see we would like to go for visions and a little bit of what occurred through this last year. So Over for 2024, we've had some great successes. We've had some challenges in there. And a review of the medical center for 2024, we are physically sound this year. 2025, our preliminaries, we've got to tighten the belt a little bit and start to look at how to pull back some of that third-party revenue. That's an area that we're a little bit weak on and all the way around. Some of the other key points to look at is some challenges over this last year. We had a change in CEOs about midway through spring. We've been looking for a CFO for a year and a half now. Help guide the ship financially a little more. Manuel has been great in sitting in and helping fill that need for that time. And then we also started with a brand new CMO, a chief medical officer this year, who comes from a wide range of experience in military in the background, but getting his feet on the ground here within the clinic to be able to help navigate some of that care. In mid-July, our MAP building had a sprinkler that broke and it flooded out our MAP building. So our medical assisted therapy wound up having to compress in a real small space for a period of time. Knock on wood, we're hoping to have that all back up and running and remodeled by January and be able to have a really nice space for everybody to use. Then going into some of the successes, as I mentioned, the MAP building to be done. Our mobile medical clinic, or we have a 40-foot RV, mobile RV, that can do dentistry, behavioral health, and some of the medical treatments that will be here. It's due to arrive December 1st, then we just have some policy and procedure planning. But hopefully within the first quarter of 2025, we should have that launched and be able to utilize it within the community. That'll be a great resource for reaching out to our elders, reaching out to the community that may not be able to make it across to the other side of the river as easily, and to do some engagement. We're looking at, we just hit phase two of our build for a 17-unit professional housing. So that way when we recruit from the outside to pull in high-quality doctors and nurses, and those key personnel that really help bring up our medical acumen and value within the Valley, have that finished up and have a place for them to stay. Trying to find rentals and houses in the area is pretty challenging there. We started the installation of our backup generators. Struggled with that. We're about halfway through. I think we're due to complete that in 2026. So that way, whether the power's out in the surrounding area, like earlier this week, we can still continue to operate. Or at least provide a warm space for those that may need to be able to come in and get out of the weather. Areas that we're going forward. So looking at the future and future planning, a few pieces that we're jumping into right now is a throughput project. We're looking at each one of the elements within our medical center is working a little more into a silo as we reemerge from COVID. We're seeing our volume pick up, which is great. It means everybody, as the reemergence out of COVID, is starting to go see their physician. They're not working on deferred health care. During COVID, all of us kind of stayed in place. We wanted that 6 feet. We didn't really want to go outside. There was that risk. But over the 2024, we've seen an increase in just about every one of our departments. Almost a third an increase in volume, which is great. It means people are utilizing the clinic. They're utilizing the sources. They're coming out for their health care and no longer deferring it. But that deferred health care has come at a cost. COVID came at its cost. When we decide to not go get our dental work done, when we decide to not follow up with our chronic diseases like diabetes, renal, things like that, it puts a toll on the body, which means that's more of a burden. It's like deferring health care or deferring care on your vehicle. It causes a little more damage, and now it takes some time to catch up with that. So as we see that and we're starting our throughput project, we're looking at how can we manage this volume better as a clinic? How can we manage seeing more patients with the platform that we have, with throughput, with this key staff? So this is a big project. It's a Lean Six Sigma project. It'll go on over 6 to 9 months on there. Every department will engage in this. The other one that we're looking at is third-party revenue. One of my specialties, I'm very aggressive at chasing third-party revenue. So we have Anthem, Blue Shield, Blue Cross. They have AR that's sitting in the past. It's aging AR. Some of it's up to 2 years old. 2 years old is about that key time that we can no longer collect on it. So pulling together a team and a task force to go after that as quickly as possible will help make us more sovereign into this next year financially and help pick up for some areas that may be in a deficit. Contracts. Most of our contracts within the medical center are pretty old. They're well over 10 years, quite a few of them, with the payer sources. Those need to be updated, and updated to a real-time pricing to what the industry pays. So as we go after those, that is a key project. Those contracts are not quick to be able to get done. They usually take anywhere from 9 months to a year and a half to settle in on a contract. And then the last, one of the last main pieces that we're chasing this year, and this is a priority. I heard this even before I actually stepped into the medical center, is a dialysis program here. I've built dialysis programs in the past. We want to get this up and running. I just met with a group recently that has built home dialysis, or they call it a home living room dialysis center. So as we move forward into this year, that's one of our aggressive approaches, is where do we put it? And then the complexity of how to build it and manage it within the clinic or within the footprint of the campus of the medical center on there. And then getting training and qualified personnel to cover that. In the long run, looking at some of the clinic and the survivability is our workforce. So this will be our last step. I've already met with the high school and started having conversations with Scotty in where our workforce is. We have a little bit of an aging personnel in there that's finite within the medical center. We have a national deficit when we look at healthcare personnel as a whole. So we're all competing out of that same bucket, and it's very costly. We have an amazing source, a feeder source, right on the other side of this wall, our high school. When we're looking at the students, and I'm working with Behavior Health and talking to our teams, they say we lose a lot of our students from about graduation to the age 24. So how do we engage them? How do we get them working with us? How do we get them into a career set? We're one of the largest employers within the Valley. So we're looking at how do we can do shadow programs. Have them come over and start working with the medical center when they're still in high school on their time off. They can still be 16. They can help at the front desk or shadow one of the nurses. Shadow with physical and plan ops to see how that job role is. It doesn't always have to be clinical in order to create a job source. In there. Pausing here, I'm just going through my notes, guys, just to see the last bit on that. We have a little bit of some of the restructuring inside of some of the policies, looking at policies, so we have one source of truth within the medical center. As an example, like HR policies, some of them are a little bit scattered. We're looking at centralizing those. Those should have one source of truth, so everything flows through. So flows through HR. Any of the information and personnel should really flow through one point versus all the separate entities within the medical clinic to make an ease of transition for our candidates coming in for sitting down to do a job application. And I'll pause there for any questions.
Anybody have any questions? Yeah, Glenna, come on up.
I just have a couple of comments. You know, my concern is that the council is taking Kamau's money every year and has for probably 20 years. And I thought there was a significant amount of money taken from Kamau when I believe that you're taking services away from the people. And I said that to you during the budget hearing in LPA. So that's one comment. Because I understand that there are people, our employees that come out that want raises, but we're told, this is just what I'm hearing, that the tribe took our money, so you can't get a raise. So I think there needs to be, that really there needs to be a better reason for not giving them a raise. Because we are also told by you, Liz, that you talked to Kamau and they were just fine with giving the tribe the money. The council. I'm glad to hear that you are working on updating the payer sources. And if it's been 10 years, that probably hasn't been done since Al Federis was the fiscal officer at Kamau. It's been quite a while, because he dealt with that when he was there. It hadn't been updated in probably 10 years at that time. I am concerned about dialysis, and I suspect that COVID had an impact on that. People weren't coming in for getting their tests, their care, and even the after effects of COVID, it was hard. It wasn't only Kamau. I work with quite a few other clinics throughout California, and it was a real struggle to get your patients back in after COVID. So it wasn't just during those 2 or 3 years, it's probably extending into 22, 23, even 24, of trying to get the patients back. You've all heard my concerns before about dialysis centers, in that Toyabe is the only Indian health clinic in California that has a dialysis center. They're looking at monies to expand or rebuild their center now, but they are living in a more populated area. Their dialysis center is very near a hospital. And they also have to fill their chairs with probably at least 50% of non-Native people from their community. In order to keep a dialysis center open, you have to keep having failing kidneys. And that's a concern. I think that we're doing a disservice if we really don't put a lot of more emphasis on prevention. We really need to prevent people's kidneys from failing, because even when you're on dialysis, that's a compromised quality of life. So that is a concern that, you know, having a dialysis center, yes, I understand. My first real experience with that was a lot of years ago when I worked as the chief dietitian at ACL Hospital in New Mexico. We had over 1,000 people with diabetes and 35 people on dialysis, and they did get a dialysis center right next to the hospital. So that made sense to that community. But my concern is we're a long ways away from a hospital, and I understand it's going to start with home dialysis. Whether we ever move past that, I would be very concerned about. So I would really hope that we put a lot more emphasis on prevention of, you know, kidney failure, diabetes, high blood pressure, and whatnot. Thank you.
Thanks, Glenn.